The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation of Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
Dream Realm Enterprises presents Showcase Classics, an anthology of classic stories and radio theater revivals for your listening pleasure. And now for our featured presentation of Jane Eyre.
Mercy Master was not burned in his bed.
Always dangerous to keep a candle lit at night. Start cutting up them vegetables.
How providential that he had the presence of mind to think of the water jug.
I wonder if that's why he left us again. Come to think of it, I haven't seen him for several days.
Ah, Master's a funny one. Last time he left us for a month without so much as a buyer leave.
What? Standing idle talking when we've much work to be done? Mr. Rochester will arrive by carriage any time now, with at least 8 guests accompanying him.
I wasn't aware he had left.
I hadn't expected you to know, dear. Adele is your priority over a mere whim of our master's.
Goodness, that'll be at least a dozen, I shouldn't wonder. I see 2 more conveyances headed in our direction.
Leah, gather the others to help you begin preparing all the rooms. John, begin attending to our guests as they arrive.
Yes, Mom.
Yes, Mrs. Fairfax.
Bonjour, mesdames.
It is Mr. Rochester's ward, I suppose. The little French girl he was speaking of.
What a love of a child.
Mrs. Fairfax. Who's that woman Adele is speaking?
That's Miss Blanche Ingram, one of the most finest accomplished ladies in the county.
She's not yet married.
No, but I dare say Mr. Rochester fancies her. They're always in each other's company.
Mr. Rochester, I thought you were not fond of children.
Nor am I.
Then what induced you to take charge of such a little doll as that? Where did you pick her up?
I did not pick her up. She was left on my hands.
Why, I suppose you have a governess for her. I saw a person over there just now. Is she gone? Oh, no, there she is, still behind the window curtain. You should hear Mama on the chapter of governesses. Mary and I have had, I should think, a dozen, at least in our day. Half of them detestable and the rest ridiculous, and all incubi, were they not, Mama?
Did you speak, my own?
We were speaking on the subject of governesses.
My dearest, don't mention governesses. The word makes me nervous. I have suffered a martyrdom from their incompetency and caprice. I thank heaven I have now done with them.
I noticed her. I'm a judge of physiognomy, and in hers, I see all the faults of her class.
Indeed. Why did you not come and speak to me in the room?
I did not wish to disturb you. You seemed engaged, sir.
What have you been doing during my absence?
Nothing at all, sir. Teaching Adele, as usual.
And getting a good deal paler than you were, as I saw at first sight. What is the matter? Did you take any cold that night? You half drowned me.
Not the least.
Return to the drawing room. You were deserting too early.
I'm tired, sir.
And a little depressed.
I am not depressed.
But I affirm that you are. So much depressed that a few more words would bring tears to your eyes. Indeed, they are there now, shining and swimming.
I beg your pardon, sir.
What is it?
A Mr. Richard Mason from Spanish Town is here to see you, sir.
Mason? Spanish Town?
Should I show him in, sir?
Take him to the library and tell him I will be there presently.
Very good, sir.
Are you ill, sir?
I wish I were in a quiet island with only you, and trouble and danger and hideous recollections removed from me.
Can I help you, sir?
Jane, if aid is wanted, I'll seek it at your hands. I promise you that. If all these people came in a body and spat at me, what would you do, Jane?
Turn them out of the room, sir, if I could.
But if I were to go to them, and they only looked at me coldly and whispered sneeringly amongst each other and then dropped off and left me one by one, what then? Would you go with them?
I should stay with you.
To comfort me?
Yes, sir, to comfort you. As well as I could.
Good night, my... Miss A.
Someone being attacked.
Someone needs help. Where is Mr. Rochester? I couldn't find him in his bed.
Yeah. Be composed, all of you. I'm coming.
What awful event is taking place? Speak. Let us know the worst at once.
A servant has had a nightmare, that is all. She's an excitable, nervous person. She constructed her dream into an apparition or something of that sort, no doubt, and has taken a fit with fright. Now then, I must see you all back to your rooms, for till the house is settled, she cannot be looked after. Gentlemen, have the goodness to set the ladies the example. Miss Ingram, I am sure you will not fail in evincing superiority to idle terrors.
Am I needed?
Are you up and dressed?
Yes, sir.
Then come out quickly.
You don't turn sick at the sight of blood.
I think I shall not. I have never been tried yet.
Come this way. Take your time and make no noise.
Sir, how did this...
There's no time for questions, Jane.
Is there immediate danger?
No, a mere scratch. Don't be so overcome, man. Bear up. I'll fetch a surgeon for you now myself. You'll be able to be removed by morning, I hope. Jane, I shall have to leave you in this room with this gentleman for an hour, or perhaps 2 hours. You will sponge the blood as I do, when it returns. If he feels faint, you will put the glass of water on that stand to his lips, and these salts to his nose. You will not speak to him on any pretext. And, Richard, it will be at the peril of your life if you speak to her. Open your lips, agitate yourself, and I'll not answer for the consequences. Now, Carter, be on the alert. I give you but half an hour for dressing the wound, fastening the bandages, getting the patient downstairs and all.
But is he fit to move, sir?
No doubt of it. It is nothing serious. He is nervous. His spirits must be kept up. Come, set to work.
Now, my good fellow, how are you?
She's done for me, I fear.
Not a whit. Courage. This day fortnight you'll hardly be a pin the worse for it. You've lost a little blood, that's all. Carter, assure him there's no danger.
I can do that conscientiously. Only I wish I could have got here sooner. He would not have bled so much. But how is this? The flesh on the shoulder is torn as well as cut. This wound was not done with a knife. There have been teeth here.
She bit me. She wounded me like a tigress when Rochester got the knife from her.
You should not have yielded. You should have grappled with her at once.
But under such circumstances, what could one do? Oh, it was frightful. I did not expect it. She looked so quiet at first.
I warned you. I said, be on your guard when you go near her. Besides, you might have waited till tomorrow and had me with you. It was mere folly to attempt the interview tonight, and alone.
I thought I could have done some good.
You thought, you thought.
She sucked the blood. She said she drained my heart.
Yes, it makes me impatient to hear you. But, however, you have suffered, and are likely to suffer enough for not taking my advice. So I'll say no more. Carter, hurry, hurry! The sun will soon rise, and I must have him off.
Directly, sir. The shoulder is just bandaged. I must look to this other wound in the arm. She has had her teeth here too, I think.
I wish I could forget it.
You will when you are out of the country. When you get back to Spanish Town, you may think of her as dead and buried. Or rather, you need not think of her at all.
Let her be taken care of. Let her be treated as tenderly as may be. Let her...
I do my best, and have done it, and will do it.
Will Grace Poole still live here, sir?
Oh, yes. Don't trouble your head about her. Put the thing out of your thoughts.
Is the danger you apprehended last night gone by now, sir?
I cannot vouch for that till Mason is out of England, nor even then. Ah, to live for me, Jane, is to stand on a crater crust which may crack open and spew fire any day.
Tell him to be cautious, sir. Let him know what you fear, and show him how you avert the danger.
If I could do that, Jane, where would the danger be? Annihilated in a moment. Ever since I have known Mason, I have only had to say to him, do that, and the thing has been done. But I cannot give him orders in this case. I cannot say, beware of harming me, Richard. For it is imperative that I should keep him ignorant that harm to me is possible. Now you look puzzled, and I will puzzle you further. You are my little friend, are you not?
I enjoy your company, sir.
Precisely. I see you do. I see genuine contentment in your gait and mien, your eye and face when you are helping me and pleasing me, working for me and with me in, as you characteristically say, all that is right. For if I bid you to do what you thought wrong, there would be no light-footed running, no neat-handed alacrity, no lively glance and animated complexion. My friend would then turn to me quiet and pale and would say, no, sir, that is impossible. I cannot do it because it is wrong. And would become immutable as a fixed star. You too have power over me and may injure me. Yet I dare not show you where I am vulnerable, lest, faithful and friendly as you are, you should transfix me at once.
If you have no more to fear from Mr. Mason than you have from me, sir, you are very safe.
God grant it may be so. Here, Jane, is an arbour. Sit down. Little friend, you have noticed my tender penchant for Miss Ingram. Don't you think if I married her, she would regenerate me with a vengeance? The night before I am married, I am sure I shall not be able to sleep. Will you promise to sit up with me, to bear me company? To you I can talk of my lovely one. For now you have seen her, and know her.
Yes, sir.
She's a rare one, is she not, Jane?
Miss Eyre, I couldn't find you in your room. A coachman came to collect you, and he asked me to give you this letter.
I'll need a leave of absence for a week or two.
What to do? Where to go?
To Gateshead. To visit my Aunt Reed, who is very sick.
You always said you had no relations.
None that would own me, sir. Mr. Reed is dead, and his wife cast me off.
And what good can you do her? Nonsense, Jane. I would never think of running 100 miles to see an old lady who will perhaps be dead before you reach her. Besides, you say she cast you off.
Yes, sir, but that is long ago, and when her circumstances were very different. I could not be easy to neglect her wishes now.
Promise me you will only stay a week.
I had better not pass my word. I might be obliged to break it.
When do you wish to go?
I must pack a bag now. Leave straight away.
Well, you must have some money. You can't travel without money, and I dare say you have not much. I have given you no salary yet. How much have you in the world, Jane?
5 shillings, sir. I'm owed 5 pounds.
Better not give you all now. You would perhaps stay away 3 months if you had 5 pounds. There are 10 more shillings. Is it not plenty?
Yes, sir. And now I may as well mention another matter of business to you, while I have the opportunity.
Matter of business? I'm curious to hear it.
You have as good as informed me, sir, that you are going shortly to be married.
Yes, what then?
In that case, sir, Adele ought to go to school. I'm sure you will perceive the necessity of it.
To get her out of my bride's way, who might otherwise walk over her rather too emphatically. There's sense in the suggestion, not a doubt of it. Adele, as you say, must go to school. And you, of course, must march straight to the devil?
I should hope not, sir, unless it is the devil who answers my advertisement.
Nonsense. I will find a situation for you.
Only if you promise me Adele and I shall be out of the house before your bride enters it.
Very well. I'll pledge my word on it.
Farewell, Mr. Rochester. For the present.
Farewell, Miss Eyre. For the present.
Is this Jane Eyre?
Yes, Aunt Reed. You sent for me, and I am here. And it is my intention to stay till I see how you get on.
Oh, of course. You have seen my daughters?
Yes.
Well, you may tell them. I wish you to stay till I can talk some things over with you I have on my mind. Tonight, it is too late. And I have a difficulty in recalling them. But there was something I wished to say. Let me see. Oh, sit up. Don't annoy me with holding the clothes fast. Are you Jane Eyre?
I am Jane Eyre.
I have had more trouble with that child than anyone would believe. Such a burden to be left on my hands, and so much annoyance as she caused me, daily and hourly, with her incomprehensible disposition, and her sudden starts of temper, and her continual, unnatural watchings of one's movements. I declare, she talked to me once like something mad, or like a fiend. No child ever spoke or looked as she did. I was glad to get her away from the house. What did they do with her at Lowood? The fever broke out there, and many of the pupils died. She, however, did not die. But I said she did. I wish she had died.
A strange wish, Mrs. Reed. Why do you hate her so?
I had a dislike to her mother always, for she was my husband's only sister, and a great favourite with him. He opposed the family's disowning her when she made her low marriage, and when news came of her death, he wept like a simpleton. He would send for the baby, though I entreated him rather to put it out to nurse and pay for its maintenance. I hated it the first time I set my eyes on it. A sickly, whining, pining thing. It would wail in its cradle all night long, not screaming heartily like any other child, but whimpering and moaning. Reed pitied it, and he used to nurse it and notice it as if it had been his own, more, indeed, than he ever noticed his own at that age.
Aunt Reed.
Who calls me aunt? You are not one of the Gibsons. And yet, I know you. That face, and the eyes, and forehead, are quite familiar to me. You are like... Why, you are like Jane Eyre. I am very ill, I know. I was trying to turn myself a few minutes since, and find I cannot move a limb. It is as well I should ease my mind before I die. What we think little of in health burdens us at such an hour as the present is to me. Is the nurse here? Is there no one else here in the Red Room but you?
We are alone, Aunt.
Well... I have twice done you a wrong, which I regret now. One was in breaking the promise which I gave my husband to bring you up as my own child. The other, after all, it is of no great importance. Perhaps, and then I may get better, and to humble myself so to her is painful. Well, I must get it over. Eternity is before me. I had better tell her. Go to my dressing case. Open it. And take out a letter you will see there. Read the letter aloud.
Madam, will you have the goodness to send me the address of my niece Jane Eyre? And to tell me how she is. It is my intention to write shortly and desire her to come to me. Providence has blessed my endeavours to secure a competency, and as I am unmarried and childless, I wish to adopt her during my life, and bequeath her at my death whatever I may have to leave. I am, madam, John Eyre, Madeira. This was dated 3 years ago. Why am I hearing of this now?
Because I disliked you too fixedly and thoroughly ever to let a hand in lifting you to prosperity. I could not forget your conduct to me. Jane, the fury with which you once turned on me. The tone in which you declared you abhorred me the worst of anybody in the world. The unchildlike look and voice with which you affirmed that the very thought of me made you sick, and asserted that I had treated you with miserable cruelty.
If you could but be persuaded to think no more of it, Aunt, and to regard me with kindness and forgiveness. Forgive me or loathe me, as you will. You have my full and free forgiveness. Ask now for God's, and be at peace.
What the deuce have you done with yourself this last month?
I've been with my aunt, sir, who is dead.
A true Janian reply. If I dared, I'd touch you to see if you are substance or shadow or elf. Absent from me a whole month, and forgetting me quite, I'll be sworn.
I'm strangely glad to get back again to you, and wherever you are is my only home.
You must have become in some degree attached to the house. You, who have an eye for natural beauties and a good deal of the organ of adhesiveness.
I am attached to it indeed. And to Adele. And to Mrs. Fairfax. And, well, to you, sir.
Pity. It is always the way of events in this life. No sooner have you got settled in a pleasant resting place than a voice calls out to you to rise and move on, for the hour of repose is expired.
Then you are going to be married, sir.
Very soon, my Miss Eyre. In a month's time, I am to be a bridegroom. And you will undertake the education of the 5 daughters of Miss Dionysius O'Gall of Bitternut Lodge, Connacht, Ireland. You like Ireland, I think. There are such warm-hearted people there, they say.
Is it a long way off, sir?
From what, Jane?
From England, from Thornfield, and...
Well?
From you, sir.
It is a long way to Ireland, Jane. And I am sorry to send my little friend on such weary travels. But if I can't do better, how is it to be helped? Are you anything akin to me, do you think, Jane? Because I sometimes have a queer feeling with regard to you. Especially when you are near me, as now. It is as if I had a string somewhere under my left ribs, tightly and inextricably knotted to a similar string situated in the corresponding quarter of your little frame. And if that boisterous channel and 200 miles or so of land come broad between us, I'm afraid that cord of communion will be snapped, and then I've a nervous notion I should take to bleeding inwardly. As for you, you'd forget me.
That I never should, sir. You know, I grieve to leave Thornfield. I love Thornfield, I love it. Because I have lived in it a full and delightful life, momentarily at least. I've not been trampled on. I've not been petrified. I've not been buried with inferior minds, excluded from every glimpse of communion with what is bright and energetic and high. I have talked face to face with what I reverence, with what I delight in, with an original, a vigorous and expanded mind. I have known you, Mr. Rochester, and it strikes me with terror and anguish to feel I absolutely must be torn from you forever. I see the necessity of departure, and it is like looking at the necessity of death.
Where do you see the necessity?
In the shape of Miss Ingram, your bride.
My bride? What bride? I have no bride.
But you will have.
Yes, I will. I will.
Then I must go.
No. You must stay.
I tell you, I must go. Do you think I can stay to become nothing to you? Do you think I am an automaton? A machine without feelings? And can bear to have my morsel of bread snatched from my lips, and my drop of living water dashed from my cup? Do you think, because I am poor, obscure, plain and little, I am soulless and heartless? You think wrong. I have as much soul as you, and full as much heart. And if God has gifted me with some beauty and much wealth, I should have made it as hard for you to leave me as it is now for me to leave you. I am not talking to you now through the medium of custom and conventionalities, nor even of mortal flesh. It is my spirit that addresses your spirit. Just as if both had passed through the grave, and we stood at God's feet, equal, as we are.
So as we are, I offer you my hand, my heart, and a share of all my possessions.
Please don't mock me.
Am I a liar in your eyes? Little skeptic, you shall be convinced. What love have I for Miss Ingram? None, and that you know. What love has she for me? None, as I have taken pains to prove. I caused a rumor to reach her that my fortune was not a third of what was supposed. And after that I presented myself to see the result. It was coldness from both her and her mother. I would not, I could not, marry Miss Ingram. You strange, you almost unearthly thing, I love as my own flesh. You, poor and obscure and small and plain as you are, I entreat to accept me as a husband.
Are you in earnest? Do you truly love me? Do you sincerely wish me to be your wife?
I do. And if an oath is necessary to satisfy you, I swear it.
Then, sir...
Edward.
Edward, I will marry you.
God pardon me. And man, meddle not with me. I have her. And will hold her.
I require and charge you both, as ye will answer at the dreadful day of judgment, when the secrets of all hearts shall be disclosed, that if either of you know any impediment why ye may not lawfully be joined together in matrimony, ye do now confess it. Be ye well assured that so many as are coupled together otherwise than God's word doth allow, are not joined together by God. Neither is the matrimony lawful. Wilt thou have this woman for thy wedded wife?
The marriage cannot go on. I declare the existence of an impediment.
Proceed.
I cannot proceed. Not without some investigation into what has been asserted, and evidence of its truth or falsehood.
The ceremony is quite broken off. I'm in a condition to prove my allegation. An insuperable impediment to this marriage exists.
What was the nature of this impediment?
It simply consists in the existence of a previous marriage. Mr. Rochester has a wife now living.
Who are you?
Mr. Briggs, sir.
And you would thrust a wife on me?
I have a document and a witness to the fact. whose testimony even you, sir, will scarcely controvert.
That, if a genuine document, may prove that I have been married. But it does not prove that the woman mentioned therein as my wife is still living.
Bertha Mason was living 3 months ago. She is now living at Thornfield Hall. I saw her there last April. I am her brother.
At Thornfield Hall? Impossible. I'm an old resident in this neighborhood, sir, and I never heard of a Mrs. Rochester at Thornfield Hall.
No, by heaven. I took care that none should hear of it, or of her under that name. Close your book. There will be no wedding today. Instead, I invite you all to join me upstairs to meet Grace Poole's patient, my wife. You shall see what sort of a being I was cheated into espousing, and judge whether or not I had the right to break the compact and seek sympathy with something at least human. This girl knew no more than you, clergyman, of the disgusting secret. She thought all was fair and legal, and never dreamt she was going to be entrapped into a feigned union with a defrauded wretch, already bound to a bad, mad, and embruted partner. Come, all of you, follow! Well, Jane, not a word of reproach, nothing bitter, nothing poignant, nothing to cut a feeling or sting a passion. You stand quietly where I have placed you, and regard me with a weary, passive look.
All is changed about me, sir. I must change too, there is no doubt of that. And to avoid fluctuations of feeling and continual combats with recollections and associations, there is only one way. Adele must have a new governess, sir.
Adele will go to school. I have settled that already. Nor do I mean to torment you with the hideous associations and recollections of Thornfield Hall. This accursed place, this tent of a Khan, this insolent vault offering the ghastliness of living death to the light of the open sky. This narrow stone hell with its one real fiend, worse than a legion of such as we imagine. Jane, you shall not stay here, nor will I.
I must leave you.
For how long, Jane? For a few minutes, while you smooth your hair, which is somewhat dishevelled, and bathe your face, which looks feverish?
I must leave Adele and Thornfield. I must part with you for my whole life. I must begin a new existence among strange faces and strange scenes.
Of course. I told you you should. I pass over the madness about parting from me. You mean you must become a part of me. As to the new existence, it is all right. You shall yet be my wife. I am not married. You shall be Mrs. Rochester, both virtually and nominally. I shall keep only to you, so long as you and I live. You shall go to a place I have in the south of France, a whitewashed villa on the shores of the Mediterranean. There you shall live a happy and guarded and most innocent life. Never fear that I wish to lure you into error, to make you my mistress. Why did you shake your head? Jane, you must be reasonable, or in truth I shall again become frantic.
Sir, your wife is living. That is a fact, acknowledged this morning by yourself. If I lived with you as you desire, I should then be your mistress. To say otherwise is sophistical, is false.
I forget you know nothing of the character of that woman, of the circumstances attending my infernal union with her. Oh, I'm certain you will agree with me in opinion, when you know all that I know. Can you listen to me?
Yes, sir.
I was sent out to Jamaica to espouse a bride already courted for me. I found her a fine woman in the style of Blanche Ingram, tall, dark, and majestic. Her family showed her to me in parties, splendidly dressed, I seldom saw her alone. I was dazzled, stimulated, my senses were excited. And being ignorant, raw, and inexperienced, I thought that I loved her. I married her, gross, grovelling, mole-eyed blockhead that I was. When I found that I could not pass a single evening, nor even a single hour of the day with her in comfort, that kindly conversation could not be sustained between us, because whatever topic I started immediately received from her a turn at once coarse and trite, perverse and imbecile. When I perceived that I should never have a quiet or settled household, because no servant would bear the continued outbreaks of her violent and unreasonable temper, or the vexations of her absurd, contradictory, exacting orders, even then I restrained myself. I eschewed upbraiding, I curtailed remonstrance, I tried to devour my repentance and disgust in secret. I repressed the deep antipathy I felt. Oh, what necessity is there to dwell on the past when the present is so much surer, the future so much brighter? Why are you silent, Jane? Do you understand what I want of you?
I will not be yours.
Jane! Do you mean to go one way in the world and to let me go another?
I do.
Oh, Jane, this is bitter. This is wicked. It would not be wicked to love me.
It would be to obey you.
One instant, Jane. Give one glance to my horrible life when you are gone. All happiness will be torn away with you. What then is left? For a wife I have but the maniac upstairs. As well might you refer me to some corpse in yonder churchyard. What shall I do, Jane? Where turn for a companion and for some hope?
Do as I do. Trust in God and yourself. Believe in heaven. Hope to meet again there. Mr. Rochester, I no more assign this fate to you than I grasp at it for myself. We were born to strive and endure, you as well as I. Do so. You will forget me before I forget you.
You make me a liar by such language. You sully my honour. I declared I could not change. You tell me to my face I shall change soon. And what a distortion in your judgment, what a perversity in your ideas is proved by your conduct. Is it better to drive a fellow creature to despair than to transgress a mere human law, no man being injured by the breach? For you have neither relatives nor acquaintances whom you need fear to offend by living with me.
God bless you, my dear master. God keep you from harm and wrong, direct you, solace you, reward you well for your past kindness to me.
Jane!
Been listening to part 4 of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte and adapted as an audio play by Rachel Pulliam. Our cast in order of appearance include Bruce Busby as announcer, Alexandra Macedo as Leah, Rhiannon McAfee as Cook, German Day as John, Elise Krawick as Mrs. Fairfax, Colette Feehan as Jane Eyre, Ossian Lantania as Adele, Mindy Rast Keenan as Blanche Ingram, Andrea Richardson as Lady Ingram, Peter Heimsoff as Edward Rochester, Kareem Cronfley as Richard Mason, Jerry Kokich as Carter, Margaret Ashley as Mrs. Reed, Heath Martin as the clergyman, and Paul Arbisi as Briggs. Additional party guest voices were provided by John Bell, Pete Lutz, Naomi Parks, Evelyn Castro, Trent Trachtenberg, Rikujo Marame, and Callum Garner. Jane Eyre was directed and produced for Dream Realm Enterprises Showcase Classics by Rachel Pulliam. All sound effects were provided by freesound.org, with original music composed by Ross Bernhard. The Showcase Classics theme was composed by Tom Rory Parsons. This is Bruce Busby, and I hope you'll join us next time for the conclusion of Jane Eyre.
This program is copyright 2021, all rights reserved. and is brought to you by Dream Realm Enterprises, warping to new dimensions.